Hello there, you're welcome to another interesting edition of Sports Africana, where we'll bring you the most interesting updates, stories that is making the rounds in the world of sports, particularly from an African angle. Been a very cool day here from where I'm talking from in the United Kingdom, but as you know, our audience cuts across all the world, and I trust you're all good wherever you're listening for. Remember, you can always listen to our podcast on all the various podcast directories such as Apple, Deezer, iTunes, Spotify, and many more. All you just need to do is type in Sport Africana, and you'll be able to get us easily and listen to all the various topics that we've recorded in time past. Today promises to be exciting. My name is Oba Adeola Amokomo, and today we're going to be taking a trip to the world of basketball. Generally, we know we always talk about football most of the time, but we like to talk about other sports that we believe has added some sort of relevance in the last few years, particularly as it concerns Nigerian basketball and the African basketball as well too. Well, for those of you who may not know, there's been a crisis in the Nigerian basketball family for quite some time now, and it reached a climax when the sport minister, well, the presidency, announced that Nigeria's going to be withdrawn from international competition for 2 years due to an ongoing leadership tussle crisis, which has been going on for a very long time. Obviously, I'm going to be talking to someone who has some sort of inside information about what's been happening within the basketball fraternity. He's a well-known journalist. He works for one of our top radio stations in Lagos, Nigeria. That's, I think, the Beat FM, if I'm right. It's no other person than Rotimi Akindele. Rotimi, thanks for joining us on Sports Africana at a very short notice, considering the fact that you came back from Rwanda, where the basketball league took place. You're welcome to Sports Africana.
Thank you very much, Oba. Good to be on your platform. Good to see you as well. I know you've been a good friend virtually, but hey, yeah. Good to finally see you.
And one day we'll virtually meet.
It's good to be here. Exactly, you know.
Yeah. Rotimi, as I mentioned earlier on, basketball, particularly we're in 2022, but the rise of Nigerian basketball again started sometime in 2012 in the wake of the London 2012 Olympics. And from an international perspective, the sport has been gathering some sort of traction. It's been growing, even though locally we had our own issues. Just last week, we heard the news that we were hoping we would never hear. We never hoped for, or we never wished the sport ministry under the leadership of Mr. Sundadari announced a 2-year ban, which was approved by the presidency, President Muhammadu Buhari. But before we go into that, can you talk us through the genesis of the problem within the basketball family in Nigeria?
Just to start with, I mean, let me pick it up from what you mentioned earlier about the rise of international basketball in Nigeria. Remember that game in 2011 in Antananarivo, where we played, I think it was against Cote d'Ivoire, and that particular game in which the current Boston Celtics boss, that was probably his last game for Nigeria, Emel Doka, helping us to qualify for the Olympics in London. He didn't go to the Olympics. That was the game. I think that was the last international game he played for us. And then, you know, we were able to get onto that big stage because of qualifying for the Olympics in London. And since then, you could talk about the rise of Nigerian basketball. Even while we qualified for the Olympics, we were yet to win the AfroBasket in a long while. And that happened finally under the captainship of Olumide Oyedeji in 2015, when we had Will Voigt, who interestingly was part of this last BAL, an Egyptian side. So, you know, if you look at that circle, it's more like we're all in the circle. We're all in the bubble where we all get to meet at some point. You know, you always meet. If you're not the coach of this, you're probably working with this. And there's that circle that you probably get to meet this. And that's what is happening on the Nigerian front as well. In 2017, when all this decided to go all out, and then go bonkers, if you allow me to use that word, it was all based on ego. It was all based on troubles. Some persons attributed it to financial gains, and maybe that's why people are so desperate, in quotes. But then you and I know that internationally, you have more funds coming when you qualify for major events, when you qualify for the Afrobasket, you qualify for the Olympics, qualify for the World Cup. There's always that sort of incentive that comes in from these bodies, international bodies that help you, that manages some of these sports. And then in terms of money, in terms of revenues, in terms of businesses, there's a whole lot that will come. I feel that was where the genesis of this problem started from. In 2017, I think we were running the Kwesi League in Nigeria. And then Kwesi League was going on well. You know, we had, for the first time in a while, we had teams looking forward to actually winning prize monies at the end of a season. Yes, we've always had one or two sponsors coming, maybe later on, or sponsors the playoffs, and then you get to win something. But at this point, you knew that as a team or as a club owner, if you win your conferences, and then you go ahead to play in the playoffs, and then probably going to win the title, there was something on ground just because of what Kwesi had done. Before then, it used to be the DSCB Premiership, where we saw a few things as well. So Kwesi coming in with more money was like an improvement on what DSCB and others had been doing before then. And everything was going on well up until election time. So when it got to election time, some persons, you know, the way we think in Nigeria, when you feel, for instance, Diola has all the monies in this particular place, oh, he can't be eating it alone. Let me go there too and see what I can either take out of it or push him out. If we keep running with such a mindset, we'll keep having these issues. And that was where the problem of the Nigerian League started from. The league was done. The elections were held. And then the stories of, oh, we didn't go with this constitution. We didn't go with that constitution. We didn't go with your constitution. And then it became, oh, we'll go to the sports ministry. We'll go to this. We'll go to that. And everything started going all south. And then it became a court case till Kwesi were frustrated to pull out of the league. Kwesi pulled out of the league. By then, the league had stopped. I mean, I don't want to go into all of the nitty-gritties or details, but the genesis was the financial angle. And then when that elections were held, we had one in, I think it was in Kano, and then we had another one in Abuja. Same thing. Now, the one in Abuja was backed by the sports ministry. And then the one in Kano, they claimed, was backed by FIBA. Interestingly, the guys in Kano were the incumbent. They were the ones, you know, trying to come back into office and all of that. But then again, when, you know, the way it's structured here in Nigeria, ordinarily the NOC should be in charge of every sport. I mean, across the world, your Olympic Committee supersedes every other federation. And so when there are issues or when you have elections, once an NOC certifies, or an Olympic Committee of the country certifies that particular election, then you're good to go. Not even the sports ministry. But you can understand Nigeria. Some of our federations will always leave gold cap in hands to these ministers. And they, oh, we want to go for this tournament. We need government support. We want to go for this tournament. We need government support. And it's looking like all of a sudden, Solomon Dalung, the previous minister, is a bit nicer now. Because during his own time, it was a case of, I want you guys to be independent. I want you guys to be able to get your own funds. You know, just paraphrase it now. That was the structure he was trying to build. And then it looks like it worked for some federations. It didn't work for some. Because, I mean, everybody knows there's what you call, in quote, free money. So free money became the order of the day. And it became a huge problem. And so when the 2017 debacle all started, even when Kwesi pulled out from the men's league, and then something started going to court, because by the time it became a court case, you can't even run the league. The women's league was still on because it had another sponsor, which was Zenith Bank. And then, okay, who is the FIBA going to communicate with? The guys from Kano, oh, he has spent, he has done two tenures. He shouldn't come back on the third tenure. If you can prove all that from the constitution, I don't think it's supposed to be an issue. You know, but because of the egos, the back and forth, I can still go another tenure. You can't go another tenure. And then it became all messy. We got FIBA involved. And then FIBA, at that point, even though some of us are tilting towards FIBA now, but then they failed to handle that stuff well, professionally. And that is probably still part of our problem. We know we have men, you know, running around with egos, trying to lay claim to everything basketball in Nigeria. But then FIBA didn't have the right template to actually resolve that issue. And then when it became, oh, it's Nigeria anyway, their biggest product from Africa or biggest export from Africa, wanting like that, oh, we'll go with the government. The government at that time was supporting the guys in Abuja because it was the sports ministry that gave a green for that Abuja elections to go on while another was happening in Kano.
If I may just chip in there at that particular point in time,
yeah.
And this is just for the benefit of our listeners who may not know the camps you're talking about. The Kano camp was being spearheaded by Tijani Umar.
Tijani Umar.
Who was the incumbent at the time. And the incoming of as at 2017 was Musa Kida. And
Musa Kida
enjoyed the support of the past minister.
The ministry,
let me put it that way. That's Wonder Solomon Dalong. And even to some degree, Mr. Sunday Dare, when he came in, he was still enjoying.
Yeah, when he came in at first.
He was still enjoying the support.
When he came in at first.
So for those who are wondering, so Musa Kida was the incumbent, became the NBEPF president from 2017 until presently when everything erupted. So I just thought to sort of clear that
out.
So you can just go on.
Yeah, that's fine. So when the ministry decided to support Musa Kida and then decided to say, okay, you know what? You can run the league. You can do everything. We are backing you. FIBA asked, oh, who are you supporting? He said, it's Musa Kida. And then FIBA says, we will communicate going forward with this particular team that the government is supporting. The other camp cried foul, did the whole lot. It's not right. Some of us were advocating then, I don't think this is the best way to resolve this issue. Call these parties to a round table. If the constitution was an issue, let's review the constitution. Let's have an election all over again, and then everybody can move on. All we want is a united team pushing our basketball growth forward. And then we started hearing stories around, we can't run the league, but we can handle the national teams. And then there was even a particular case where two Nigerian national teams, went to an African tournament. And FIBA, so TJ Umar's camp sent one, Musa Kuda's camp sent one, and both of them were meant to represent Nigeria. And then FIBA, of course, because they were FIBA Africa then, decided to say, okay, no, it is the one that we recognize. The ones we're communicating with, that team should stay. It got that messy. So if we're talking of international embarrassment, it's not today. Like, we've been experiencing it, you know, for a bit. So for that particular situation, I mean, some of us were neutral because we just felt, you know what, hopefully we can correct all of this. This man can drop their guards and all, blah, 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 blah. And then fast forward to international teams, the D-Tigers picked up. If we're supposed to go to any major tournament, the ones recognized by the sports ministry, we go to the sports ministry and like, oh, we have this tournament, we need funds. And then because the sports ministry were in good terms with them, give them the monies. Meanwhile, the other camp was holding on to the Kwesi, like the part of the Kwesi money that was still left, you know, and then the back and forth, you know, kept going. You can't do the league year one, year two, year three. We're in court. And even sometimes, was it last year or 2020, when the court decided, okay, this court case is over, you guys are go back to running the league, nothing still happened.
There was no league for 4 years.
There's been no league till now. All you've been seeing since 2017, I don't think there's been any basketball league in Nigeria. Especially from even the ones we saw from the women's end had been, you know, when you're trying to organize, I mean, let's just paint it well. Let's say an abridged league. So you just call teams, invitationals, and like, oh, we need to present a representative for Nigeria at one club competition organized by FIBA. Let's put together something for 1 month. And then you quickly run all those things, and then you send the winner. So that's what we've been having. And that has been the situation in Nigeria. So domestically, on the home front, there's been nothing. There's been no improvement. The basketballers have been down. There's been no sort of work. There's been no sort of job. Salaries were stopped. So there was nothing called basketball growth happening in Nigeria. The only thing that was functional or that was thriving was that we were doing well on the international scene because we have friends or we have citizens outside of the country.
We
have Nigerians in diaspora who are ready to play for Nigeria anyway. So as long as they were still representing the country, everybody was happy. But for the home front, nothing was going on the home front. So everybody was hoping, okay, you know what? At some point, there will be a way, you know, to organize leagues, to do all that. And then we can understand that all of this, you know, was going on. And then it was only going to affect some set of people, which were the players, male and female. I am pretty close to some of the players back home. And it's been one sorry story to another, sorry story to another. And then you just try to tell these people, you know what? Hopefully the men will drop their egos. I mean, most of our basketballers have stopped playing basketball. They've probably gone into other businesses. The ones that were fortunate to travel out and maybe go to school or play professionally have done that.
So wait, what you're saying is that majority of the local basketball players are veered into different things because of this tussle.
Yeah, because they can't play. Yeah, that's a fact. I know few of them that have gone into shoemaking business, clothing lines, open barber shops, gone into transportation, Uber, Bolt, you know, and all that. I mean, some of them have even lost interest in playing the game, playing the basketball game. Some of them as well, maybe because I'm privy to it, had changed sports. They've left basketball. So somehow, American football started creeping in into Nigeria, into Africa. And one or two of them are now in the U.S. not playing basketball, but playing American football. So there was a whole lot of fallout from whatever tussle these men were having and that had lasted this long. We can blame FIBA. FIBA should have handled that well. FIBA did not. I was on a show, should be about 2 years ago. I think before maybe 2020 or two, I can't remember. When this Musa Kida camp came up and like, oh, we finally got a letter from FIBA to start organizing league matches, leagues across Nigeria. And there was the case was in court then. And then I was asking the representative, I'm like, are you sure that you have, FIBA cannot dictate how the league is run in Nigeria. There's a court case. FIBA will only take a stand after the court case had been resolved or had been concluded. But you say you have a letter from FIBA saying that go ahead, we can start organizing these. And then we were on a live show. And I'm like, I was on that show with some other big colleagues, Charles and the likes. And then it was like, give us the letter. Let us read it out on the air. Yola, when we got the letter, it wasn't official. It wasn't on the letterhead. It was an email exchange. How do you go about moving around and saying you have a backing from an international body without a proper documentation? You understand? So it makes everything look like a joke. You guys are here now. We think you're just here for the money. The other ones are crying foul because we feel they just want to keep getting the money. So it's, like I said, it's been a messy situation on the home front. In fact, we've even made enemies from colleagues who support this camp, who support that camp, which, you know, it's just very messy.
If we can now even go now a little bit, what now made the Musa Kida led MBBF administration, what now made them fall out with the current ministry whom they've been enjoying support from? We know the election was due to old, because I would have thought that since Mr. Sunday Dare had been supporting Musa Kida right from his administration, went wrong along the line? What shifted?
Now, that's a tough question because, I mean, I'm not inside of their heads. But then again, what I felt happened was when Sunday Dare came in and was relating with Musa Kida, the teams were bringing glory to Nigeria at the international level, the women, the men. And then when the issue of, which is where I probably would blame the players at some point, when they went on that protest, you know, and saying they were demanding for monies, old and all, which is right. I mean, you can demand for monies. But then I didn't think that was the best route going publicly. That's my own take. Because see, this is Nigeria. This is Africa. We need to be real. You don't fight a government like that. You don't. I'm not sure any government in the world will cross their hands and watch you do all that, you know, to them, all in the bid of, oh, I want to protest and I need to get some monies. I know it is wrong to hold. If they've done the work for you, oh, pay them their remunerations and let us move on. But I felt that was where some of the issues started coming from, because the players, some of them were against the current MBBF board, which was led by Musa Kida, and saying, no, they are at fault for this, they are at fault for that, they are at fault for this, they are at fault for that. I guess that was what triggered what is happening between you and these players. Oh, are the players taking a stand? Oh, we don't want to see Musa Kida again, we want him to go, and all of that. Like I said, it was a protest, even though it wasn't the right channel as far as I'm concerned, but they had voiced it out. And then the sports ministry, if you remember, they did put out a statement, oh, we're going to resolve it, we're going to call a meeting. Yeah, and then Musa Kida, in a bid to defend himself or defend his board, decided to say, oh, I'm not the one owing you, it's the sports ministry that is owing you. Exactly. And that became, oh, really, this is where we are. There are emails and documents backing all this up. And then the sports ministry had to respond because it had been mentioned that, oh, it is Nigeria that is owing you and not the MBBF. And so the sports ministry says, okay, we'll look into it. We'll pay your monies. We'll do that. We'll do that. Some monies were later paid from our findings. Some monies were later paid. I think some are still being owed and all of that. And then before I talk about what the sports minister is pretty upset about, the minister called for a reconciliation or a reconciliatory team that included some members of TJ Umar, some members of Kida, and then some neutrals in court. They made their findings and then a report was submitted. I'm saying the ministry should submit that report and show us publicly what that panel recommended so that everybody will know whatever decision you are taking now, oh, it was a fallout from this. But we've not seen that report anyway. That's the report from that ministry. But excerpts from that report did say that, okay, we look at your constitution. Since you guys are running with the constitution, we look at the TJ Umar's constitution. We're trying to see if we can merge together and then chart a way forward, which was what we were made to understand that in after that panel, that was what was concluded on. FIBA was sent that revised constitution and FIBA approved that. Okay, you can go ahead with this one and then hold your elections. I mean, these details are everywhere. That FIBA approved that constitution and that was what they were going to run with. That was after the Congress had been called. And then the Congress called for an election date. FIBA wrote again and like, we need to know that there's a president by January 31st, blah, 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 and all that. And it was agreed that we'll hold our election January 31st, 2022, in Benin City, Edo State. All of a sudden, I think some 2 weeks to that election, the sports ministry says, you can't hold your elections in Benin. Come to Abuja and hold your election. The Congress, in court, says, no. The Congress had spoken that this is where we want our elections to be held. What's the sports ministry's... I mean, you can't dictate to us where we should hold our elections. And then this were where all these cracks started coming from. I mean, the Congress, quote now, decided to go on with their plan, not minding the sports ministry. Because technically, it's no business of the sports ministry, if we want to be fair. Hmm. The Congress are taking the decision, let's go on, let's wait for them. If there are issues, let them come to us. As a sports ministry, we're supposed to just oversee, not to dictate. But because of the uniqueness of our country, as a sports ministry, we wanted to have our way. And then when that didn't happen, I was shocked when I saw that there was another election going on in Abuja. Hmm. Because if you had called the Congress, if there were factional congresses after the FIBA approved constitution had been ratified and given a green, we would have known. But I can tell you, maybe because I'm not in Abuja, I'm in Lagos currently. A day to the election was when we heard that there could be another Abuja election. And the question was to be held by who? Because some of the guys from TJ's camp had even gone to pick forms in Benin City for the new elections. So who were the ones fueling another election in Abuja? It's definitely not from that camp. You know, we had two factions. It's definitely not from this faction. So where was this coming from? And then the report on election day, the sports ministry had said they should go ahead, open the package, was it package A or package B part, and let them hold elections. The question we should be asking ourselves, who were the ones that voted in Abuja? Who were the ones that held that election, that certified that election? Okay, in Abuja? Did he have any FIBA representative? Did he have any NOC representatives? Did he have NBBF board members? So where was the election coming out from? And then when it was held, I was like, oh, there were no elections. We saw some aggrieved players. So you can understand it's easier for you to buy folks who are upset or who are angry. You know, then we saw some pictures of players who had not played league in a while in Abuja as part of delegates.
I want you to hold it there. Yeah. We'll just go on a quick break. We'll be right back to talk about the elections. The one, okay. The election, the two, and two different locations. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Sport Africana. And we've been looking at the basketball administration crisis in Nigeria. And with me, it's Rotimi Akindele. Rotimi, thanks for joining us once again.
Thank you.
We're talking about the election holding in two places, one in Benin and the other in Abuja. So can you just go ahead as you were talking on earlier on before we went on break?
Okay. So like I said, the questions have to be asked about how the Abuja election went ahead. Like, what were the modalities that governed the election process or the election process in Abuja? Was he handpicked? That's talking about the new man that was produced there. Was there a constitution? If there was a constitution approved by who and what? What body? Who were the personnel or the delegates who voted? You know, those are some of the questions. From the pictures we saw, it didn't look like a Congress called that basketball. It just looked like something was going on and then somebody was handpicked. And then because they had the backing of the sports ministry, oh, this is your new basketball president. Meanwhile, the one in Benin City had all the Congress members. Or let me not say all. Had most of the Congress members. Had a FIBA official in town. Had the NOC up until few hours before election time. That's a different story. Had the NOC representatives in Benin up until few hours before election time. And then somehow, while the election was on, the NOC person was nowhere to be found. So, order from above. That was what we were told. Like, you know, order from above. But then again, like I said, this was done using the FIBA ratified constitution, which was approved weeks before that election was called. And then Olumide Oyedeji, who was with the other camp initially, came in. The Congress was there, had the election, won his election to be a Southwest rep on the board. That alone for me was like, okay, finally, this is just my own view. I don't know. Politics can be very messy, I know. But my own opinion was, oh, finally, looks like we have a bit of reading or something positive coming out from this basketball scene. Now that we have some members of the factions in quotes now coming together to see how to work together. And then looks like we have a headway. Now we're moving forward. But what happened? Sports Ministry says we can't recognize the election in Benin City. Number one, Oba, it's not in the place of the Sports Ministry to certify election. It is the NOC. But because the NOC can't even come out now to tell us who they are backing, that's a different issue. So it's more like a power tussle from the federal government angle and some federation, because this was the perfect timing. The election period was the perfect timing for us to put an end to everything basketball crisis in Nigeria. Everything. I mean, just like the way I was trained, I tried to ask questions in Abuja. There was no positive answer. So I'm like, it's not newsworthy addressing the man in Abuja as the MBBF president. If we go with the rules, if we go by the rules, the MBBF president was the man re-elected in Benin City. Thankfully, because they used a FIBA ratified constitution and then let's just move on. And then that was where this back and forth came in. The minister, now part of his defense of, oh, we spoke to the presidency and they said we should withdraw international basketball, blah, 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 for setting up IMC, was that some of the players, or let's say the players, had gotten involved with the politics. And I'm like, that is still not enough reason for you to say, oh, we are withdrawing ourselves from international basketball for 2 years. It is still not a good enough reason. The players are human. If they are saying they are backing this person or they are backing this person, I don't think the punishment should be, oh, because you guys are not getting involved in politics, this is what we will do. We've cost ourselves lots of embarrassment already. So if you are saying, oh, they're trying to tell us, give Nigeria international embarrassment at the World Cup and all of that, I don't think it is new. And I don't think those players will probably, they will get to Australia or back, and then they tell us, oh, it's time for Nigeria and Australia to come and play. And then they stay in their locker room and say, we're not coming, we're protesting. I don't think so. I don't think we ever see that happen. But like I said, those are some of the excuses being made by the sports ministry. Oh, the basketballers had been in shambles. Oh, the players had gotten involved in politics. And because of this, we are withdrawing this. Right. Now, it didn't go down well with... Yeah, you want to say something?
Yeah. Do you think there's something personal from the minister, that's Minister Sunday Dare, against Musa Kida? Or there are other news making the round that the previous MBBF president, that is Tijani Umar, has some sort of influence within the presidency? What do you have to say to this?
Okay, so, well, like, for somebody like me, I don't like to run based on assumptions. If TJ Umar has a hand in this, he can come out, his team can come out and tell us, oh, for sanity of Nigeria basketball, Labalu, I've decided to do this, or decided to direct the minister to do this. But then I've also heard as well that the minister actually fell out with Kida, because like you mentioned earlier, they were in good terms when he first got it. Whatever led to that fallout is what I don't know. I mean, I can't tell. Whatever led to the fallout between the minister and Kida, and then why it had to be, oh, everybody has to step down, everybody has to resign for us to chart a new course. So that you can actually say there's something personal, because at some point they were in good terms and now everybody is going their separate ways. So there's definitely something personal. There's also the story from, oh, it's the advisors he picked or he appointed, talking about the ministers. Some of them had advised him to take this decision. And some of them are meant to be colleagues, senior colleagues with exposures, with things they know. I mean, we know what the football withdrawal in 1996 cost us as a national team. And if not for the fact that we were lucky to be co-hosting with Ghana in 2000, we were supposed to come back to the Nations Cup in 2002 and not even year 2000, because we had withdrawn in 96. We were supposed to be banned for the next two editions. But we got banned for one and came back as co-host. So all these things are written, and we all know that international bodies actually frowns at government interference a whole lot, you know. But like I said, I'm going to put this out there. In Kigali, I had a chat with the FIBA Africa president, and he told me, he said, my friend, Nigeria is our biggest export. We love that country. Yeah, we love that country. They put Africa basketball on a big pedestal that everybody respects us. We don't like what is happening. We can't even bear what is happening. And that's why we're taking our time. This is me quoting him verbatim. We're taking our time to see if there can be a resolution, and then we don't have to withdraw the ladies from the World Cup. Yeah.
So what you are telling me, FIBA Africa respects Nigerians so much, at least
a whole lot,
what we've done in the last few years, putting
yeah
the world on the map, that they are not swift to make a decision.
That's the only reason. You can quote me anywhere. That's the only reason. By now, we should be hearing of, before we went for the BAL finals, the sports ministry had proclaimed the decision or pronounced the decision that Nigeria was going to withdraw from international basketball. I almost became a spokesman in Kigali, because everybody that was coming from all parts of the world were asking, what's wrong with Nigerian basketball? What's wrong with Nigerian basketball? And then I got that. I was only staying positive, like, oh, don't worry, it's just some issues. I'm trying to be resolved. Oh, we will be at the World Cup. And then I was just singing that tune, not knowing that there's something more. Because before then, after talking to the FIBA Africa president, he told me, he was like, we're taking our time. We're hoping they resolve these issues. But all of the mails we're getting from Nigeria does not reflect that they are ready for peace to bring. Those were his words. That all of the mails. And then I found that, I mean, the sports minister, or the sports ministry now, writing to FIBA directly to say, this is our decision. It's not done. We all know what's up. It's just like the sports minister writing to FIFA and telling them, we decided to run our league in Nigeria by ourselves. Nothing from the NFF or LMC. There are penalties to face, you know, for all of this. And then, thankfully, I was not the only Nigerian in Kigali. So I had another colleague who was there. I was listening to all these things when the FIBA Africa president was telling us, oh, do you also know, out of, like, I was asking us, do you also know that if we continue with that two-year hiatus from basketball, there are other fines and other punishment that will come in, and that you guys might be out of basketball for the next 4 or 5 years? I said, yes, because we've also gone to check what will be the outcome. If we embark on this two-year journey, what happens afterwards? That means we're out of, we won't be able to qualify for the next AfroBasket. if you miss out on the Afrobasket, you automatically miss out of Olympics. If you miss out of Olympics, you automatically miss out of the World Cup qualifiers. Talk less of going to the World Cup. So that means, apart from the fines that will come, remember we pulled out of the under 20 World Cup. I think it was under 20 Women's World Cup in Chile in 2011. I can't remember what our reasons were. I don't think it was funding. But we pulled out of that tournament. Three teams that remained in our group went on to play that tournament. And then we were fined at about maybe $70,000 or $80,000 for pulling out, for disrupting the program and all of that. Yes, that was in 2011. So there are repercussions, there are penalties to this thing. And then when I was told again, so I had, that was the first meeting we had with the Africa president. And then I had another one-on-one with him just immediately after the BAL final. And it was like, see, this is what we'll probably do. Withdraw the women from the World Cup because the Australian LOC for the World Cup in September, I started saying, we need to know your stance as FIBA. That's FIBA Worldwide. Now, FIBA Worldwide is asking FIBA Africa, what is your stance on Nigeria? About 20-25% of tickets involving Nigeria had been sold. Yeah, we are in that very interesting group that has France, that has Australia, I think has Canada. It's a tough group. So everybody was already looking forward to the matches in that particular group. And then, like I said, about 25% ticket had been sold. And when the news about, oh, Nigeria might not be at the World Cup because of the self-ban, people started asking for reform. Exactly. They were not ready to switch their tickets. So it was reforms. It was affecting the Australian LOC that were putting together the World Cup. And then they wanted to get a stance from FIBA. Tell us what is happening so that we can get back to our people and tell them Nigeria is no longer coming. This will be the country. Tickets have been reprinted or reissued, and this is what you get. That's how important planning is for them. And then they gave us up till last week, Monday, to come back to them. That's FIBA. But like I said, there was nothing coming from Nigeria except for fights, for issues, for complaints. Nothing was looking like a resolution. Now we've been withdrawn from the Women's World Cup because FIBA is still hoping that by the time the third window of the men's qualifiers for the World Cup starts on July 1st, in Rwanda, we will be there. So there's no heavy sanction on Nigeria. Like, oh, you've been banned outrightly for five. We've played two windows. Third window resumes at the end of June, by July 1st. If we don't do anything now, Oba, between now and the next few days, FIBA will be forced. I've said it. They didn't hide the fact that they like Nigeria or they love Nigeria. They didn't hide that fact. But at this point, if we're not doing anything on the home front to correct it, then if D Tigers pulls out of the window, third window of the qualifiers, it means the three teams in that group will automatically qualify for the next round of the World Cup qualifiers. Then Nigeria is automatically out. Then FIBA can now throw us the sanctions. We might be like a 3-year ban or a 5-year ban, depending. But from a pitiful angle, I think FIBA really exercised that patience with Nigeria and looks like we're not ready to take the leaf they're pushing towards. So it's all, like I said, the ministry is not seeing the bigger picture. The IMC or whatever committee, if I don't personally, I don't even like to talk about that because I'm like, you guys know whatever you're doing now is wrong. It is wrong. At the end of the day, at the end of the 3-year ban or 5-year ban, if FIBA wants to reinstate us into the basketball international fold, they still go back to January 31st election. They won't pick it up from the IMC. So why are we going this route? Everything is written. It's a constitution. So it's there for everyone to see and read up. Nobody's going to say, oh, because Nigeria basketball has been running with an independent group for 5 years, okay, let's now deal with them. No. And that's why we're telling the ministry, you can unban this, you can lift this ban, and then still try to find a solution. If you need the men involved or the team involved, the factions involved to step down as a Nigerian consign, you know, and then you want to call them from the office of the Ministry of the Presidency angle and bring them out and say, you know what, all of you, we are giving you 2 months to leave this basketball scene. We need to, yes, there might be protests, but not place a ban that probably cost us more than whatever is happening to us now. This is just child's play.
Talking about the ban so far, I've been on several Twitter
spaces.
Places where different basketball stakeholders, and I guess you would have been on them as well. I think in the last 2 days, we had the D Tigress and yesterday, the D Tigers making their stands. In fact, it so hurt the players to the point that I heard from the men's standpoint that they were thinking of how they can go independently and still represent us. But they were told that they hit a crossroad in the sense that the signature of PIDA will still be needed to approve such. What do you make of this whole situation, particularly from the player's angle? I mean, for the first time, I'm now seeing that even the players are so proud. They want to, I don't even see it among our men's football players. The basketballers really want to play. What do you think?
Yes, we know the basketballers want to play. And this is me. Whoever sold the idea of the players getting involved with the politicking didn't do well. So when you got involved, then you started protesting, started signing. I mean, you guys come up with a conclusion and then everybody now has to sign on it, backing, oh, we don't want this man to lead us, or we don't want this, we don't want this. I think that was where the players shot themselves, you know, in the foot. But be that as it may, like I said earlier, we're all humans. So things can hurt you and then you want to take some decisions at the end of the day without even looking at it holistically. So I feel that's where the players, you know, were, you know, with those decisions of, oh, let's sign, we want this person out, we don't want this person, we want this team manager, we don't want this team manager, we want this coach, we don't want this coach. I feel that's where the players got it all wrong. But since it's hurting everyone, it's not a bad way to show your grievance or to show that you're not happy about a decision. Unfortunately, the spaces, Twitter, D-Tigers, is it getting to the right person? That's the question. Because if the right people are watching, the same people advising the sports minister, if they had watched and like, oh, maybe these players are sorry, they want to play, they want to represent Nigeria, then they can take it back to him and say, everybody is willing to play, let us move on. The only way they can go independent is because there's still a board. That board, as far as FIFA is concerned, is still running. So nobody can go independent. I heard of a group in the US that says they want to be funding the national teams, that the MBBF should give them the national team so that they can fund them to major tournaments or major competitions. It's not going to happen that way. All those things can be classified as interference. So FIBA will watch you do all that, except you want to be playing private competitions or you want to be playing invitationals, not a FIBA certified event. One of the reasons why River Supers didn't participate in this year's BAL was because when the league had been concluded, the regular season, that's the abridged league we have, had been concluded, MBBF were meant to go ahead and organize their playoff. But then the sports ministry says they want to organize the playoffs. FIBA wrote and like, no, you can't organize the playoffs because it is not in your place to. If you do, we won't even recognize your champions, which was what happened. Sports ministry insisted that the final eight of the playoffs should be done in Abuja, and then the winners would go on and represent us on the continent. It didn't happen. River Supers went on to win that stuff because everybody just wanted to play basketball. Everybody was tired. They just want to play basketball. And then when it was done, there was no acknowledgement from anywhere because it wasn't put together by the governing body in Nigeria. And that was how FIBA, Supers missed out on the deadline. And they were not part of this BAL, even though they were there last year. They were not, and that was what happened. And so you see all the improvements going on to other African countries. I mean, BAL is a fantastic product, fantastic idea. There are teams consciously improving, trying to meet up with the standard that the BAL has brought in every Africa. And then we are here still fighting. We don't even have one solid basketball court in Nigeria to host, let me say, an NBA standard game or an international standard game, except we ship it in. We don't have. And then you want us to. So the IMC that is being set up, where would they play? Do we have the facilities to even play regular basketball or even good enough basketball? We don't. Why are we deceiving ourselves? Whatever move is being made by the ministry or by those advising them, we all know it. They all know it's wrong. And the IMC project is just another project, and maybe like a Fortune 500 chase. It's just there. It's really not going to bring up any talent or churn out any. The talents you are churning out, where are they going to be exposed to? Where are they going to be playing? The IMC will organize international meets and then they fly them out as what? To what events? To what FIBA events? To what basketball? But you want to start playing EuroLeague from Nigeria. It's just somehow, but I don't know, but that's where we are. I'm still thinking we can unban ourselves. At least the D-Tigers can plan to go for that third window of the qualifiers. And then let's see if FIBA can reinstate the D-Tigers to play in the Women's World Cup and all of that. But as it is, I'll just go with the FIBA Africa president. Looks like nobody in Nigeria, especially from the ministry who has also been writing FIBA, is ready to find any sort of truth at this point. Whatever they're selling to the media out there, saying we're trying to look for a way to develop the game, we're trying to look for a way to make basketball in Nigeria sane, I think it's all not newsworthy enough.
Wow, that's been a revelation. There you have it, everyone. What's happening in the basketball family? We hope that a truce would eventually benefit from this. And more so, the players, the officials, the referees, the umpires. And again, as much as we are not happy with the ban, but one fundamental thing that's been mentioned is the fact that there's not been a functional league system in the last 4 years. So we need to look at everything holistically. I think we would appeal to the sport ministry to ensure that this ban gets lifted so that everybody can be happy. The D-Tigers have been bringing some joy to Nigeria, but I dare say they are the best sports teams that Nigeria are producing at the moment. So we hope that all this can be resolved. Thank you very much, Rotimi, for joining us. Really appreciate your time and your presence, and hopefully some other time we'll be able to catch up again whenever there are pertinent issues to be talked about.
Thank you very much, Oba. I mean, it's a privilege being on the show with you. Like I always say, I'm still staying positive. I hope there can be a resolution.
I'm in positive as well.
I saw Masai Ujiri's open letter.
I did.
And I'm like, hey, chief, this is not what we want now. But like I said, everyone is pained. Everyone is angry. Everyone is upset. But I'm hoping that even in our bid to look for a resolution, we'll take the right steps first, then we can now find a resolution. We've taken the wrong steps already, which is not good. We can still retract it, retrace our steps, and then hopefully find a resolution at the end of the day that will bode well for everybody, because this ban affects not just the players, referees, umpires, anything you want to do with Nigeria, anything you want to do at all with Nigeria, whoever is represented as Nigeria will all be affected. So let's hope, let's just stay positive. But thanks for having me on the show.
Right, there you have it. And until we come your way again, we will bring you another interesting edition of Sports Africana. Have a wonderful day and stay blessed.